haven't heard Guillermo's voice.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night. We're back, and we're on Joy of Sacrifice. This is our third course, third class, I believe. And we're actually jumping ahead. We touched on the Corridor of Madness 2 weeks ago, and we pounded on the Corridor of Madness. And if you want to go back and listen to that, go to the website wingsofchaos.com/joyofsacrifice, the Joy of Sacrifice, and you'll see the menu for Joy of Sacrifice. And that particular chapter has created quite a stir. There's a lot of good comments. But now we're moving from the Corridor of Madness into the sacrifices. And we're going to, and if you go on the sacrifices, there are two pages up. One is Sacrifice 00 and one is Sacrifice 01, which is Sacrifice of Comfort. And you'll see a fairly vibrant conversation going on. And what is helpful is to see to put your story there. Your story is the story that we're looking to create the dialectic. And it's the dialectic that gets listened to over the ages. So the way we're going to structure this particular class, I'm going to talk about sacrifice for a few minutes. Then what we're going to do is we're going to go and we'll discuss that, and then we'll launch into the first sacrifice, which is sacrifice of comfort. After what I hope to do, and Ivan, you'll be able to help me here, what I hope to do is to create a methodology of what is sacrifice and how do you actually apply it. How do you actually apply this concept? And then if we're a bit successful at that and we understand, then what I'd like to do is apply that to the whole principle of the sacrifice of comfort. And I'll be looking for a specific example for us to work with. So if you have a particular form of comfort that you'd like to work with, bring it forth, and it'll be something that we will work with, dissect, and create a sacrifice for. So think about that in the first, because it'll take me about 15 to 20 minutes, and then after that, we'll go right into it. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right, so I began pondering the idea a couple of weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago actually, what is sacrifice? What do we mean by it? And as I mentioned on the website, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, I'm going to give this up. Give this or that up. I'm going to give up eating big hunk candy bars, if they so exist. And they do, I'm told, by this vast audience that's here joining us. And so that's the first thing, but that just didn't sit well enough with me. And I considered the word itself is, what is sacrifice? Why does it have the same root that, for instance, sacrament has, sacred? The whole idea of sacred. And as I started looking at it a bit more, it was clear to me that the idea and concept of sacrifice was throughout. It's throughout the ages. Everywhere, as far back as you can look, there's some form of sacrifice that occurs. It's a sacrifice that occurs in disparate places, no matter where you are, what culture, north, south, on the equator, there is some form of sacrifice. And needless to say, it's actually a subgenre in the whole study of anthropology, is the specialty of sacrifice and to work with it. So I started considering this idea. What is sacrifice? How does that interplay, for instance, with the word an offering? And there was a difference. What would the difference be? And as I started looking at the idea of sacrifice, for instance, we're all familiar with the concept of the sacrificial lamb, for instance. But what really happened there? What happened in the myriad of sacrifices that occurred throughout these different cultures? It was always a sacrifice generally made by who? Who carried it out? It was often somebody in the religious order of the tribe, the society, or the culture, the priest. But here's the side that we tend not to look at because we're so externally motivated all the time. Prior to sacrifice, something went on, right? Something went on before the thing was sacrificed. Before the sacrifice, there was some act that occurred. Now, if you start dissecting it, what happened was that only it was the priest that did it. And why only them? And to whom was the sacrifice made? The sacrifice was made by the tribe or the society to the divine. It was made to the divine. And what was the portal for that? And it was the priesthood. But what did he do prior to performing the very last act of the sacrifice? Let's say, cutting the throat of a lamb or the ram or something like that in its offering. What happened before? Often what happened is that the priest would cleanse them. They would bathe. They would dress in holy raiment. They would prepare themselves with incense. They would do certain rituals, certain prayers. And they would prepare themselves before they even approach the object of sacrifice. Now I'm going somewhere here. So they then prepared themselves to this ritual of different acts. Sometimes it was just merely the idea of washing and putting on holy clothes and dressing in a certain way. That in itself, we use the word what? Invocation. We enter into that space. Now, when they are doing that, in the process of doing that, the object of sacrifice starts to become something different. It is no longer just a ram to be sacrificed. It's no longer the fatted calf. And by the way, if you recall and you read some of this stuff, you see that the sacrifice wasn't the least of the herd, but the best. And why is that again? Because it's going, the sacrifice is for the sacrifice of the divine. Now, this action then is to take that object of sacrifice and work with it through this ritualistic method, which is knowable. Just because you use the word ritual does not mean we can't know it and we can't perform that. We can. But it does take a little bit of effort. It takes an effort other than our effort at regular mechanical life. Now, this process of taking the object of sacrifice and the work that the priest did for them on themselves is what I call the act of consecration. They would consecrate the object of sacrifice. They themselves had to be different in this in order to even enter into the space. They couldn't be, so to speak, standing in their regular self. They had to be in their divine self. And only when the object is so consecrated and that object of consecration was prepared, only then was it able to sacrifice, so to speak, the divine. I started thinking, So it's integral to the idea of sacrifice is this idea of consecration. How could that work today? We tend not to have altars and altar fires where we offer up our fatted calf for the good of the tribe, so to speak. But if it is an objective, ritualistic act, it must exist somewhere now today. It must be something that we can do. Just like iconography, even though iconography took a particular form years and years ago, it still exists today. But that's a whole other conversation that's similar. So, first of all, what are those elements then? There's an object of sacrifice and there's an act of consecration, to consecrate. To consecrate something means to make it different than it was, and it means to making it divine, so you can give it up. Give it up to the divine, to elevate it to the divine. So, we're talking about these ideas of, like, for instance, the sacrifice of comfort. So we think about certain things. If you go on the website, you'll see a number of people put up some very, very interesting things. So let's just take this idea of you like these particular treats. You have a treat that you really like. And let's say that's what you say, oh, that's what I'm going to sacrifice. But what is it you're actually sacrificing, and how do you create and make it an object? Well, so let's say that you have a particular tendency that you want to work with here, and that's what I'm hoping someone will come up with an example for us to really work with as a group. But let's say it's a tendency you like to create or something like that. So, what actually is the process there? It's not the treat, the donut or the candy or whatever it is. That's not the issue. The issue is the tendency within you, and that is a very specific something. And that operable thing within you, if you start to pay attention to it, what happens? First of all, it stops being mechanical. Because you notice it, right? And if you notice it, you start to make it into a not you. It is no longer a you, it's an object. And you notice it working in you. You say, how curious that is. And at this point in the ritualistic process of sacrifice, I say, is by placing our attention on that process, we are beginning the process of consecration. By beginning the process of consecration, you're coding it, in a sense, coding the process within us. You're coding it with attention. And the attention is coming from the essential self. The essential self is our link to the divine. That is our link to where we want to go and we are headed. So this act of attention is the act of consecration. So if we begin to continue to place our attention on that particular tendency, it suddenly is something that is encased, in a sense, with attention, and it becomes different. And only by being, by transmuting it that way, does it become something that you are then able to sacrifice. That's the thing that you sacrifice. And it only makes sense if it occurs through this act of attention. And by placing our attention in on that way, we're then able to stand aside from it because we are no longer it. So, that's my thought. That's my 2 cents for the night.
That sounded like a couple of dollars to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Silverdale. any of you, first of all, I'd like to kick that around to see if people think that that holds water. Does it make sense? Is that something that where we are duplicating the rituals of sacrifice of ancient times, so to speak, and that's how we can do it today, using the teachings and methodologies that we use, and some of the principles we're seeing in The Joy of Sacrifice, the book Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold.
Is this the beginning of prayer absolute? Buddha.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question. I'm not sure if this is the same question, but I'm not quite clear with David with what you're saying. Whether what you mean is that the sacrifice, when we're talking about these sacrifices, you know, the way that EJ has presented them in The Joy of Sacrifice, are we talking about something that we sacrifice because that then is the offering to the higher?
Yeah.
Sacrificing it because, but see, I'm not so sure that the attachment, let's say, to that, those candy bars, let's say I got to have my ice cream sundae every night or whatever it is. It's my attachment
yeah.
that I'm wanting to become aware of.
That.
And it's the attachment that I'm wanting to break the bond of this attachment. And this whole description, you know, the description in this passage in the book about the sacrifice of comfort is clearly about a monastic, embracing a monastic lifestyle.
Life of austerity,
yeah. Yeah, a convent, like a convent or a monastery, being austere. And but you basically, there's not a lot of detail about what it is that you're going to give up, but it's pretty clear what it is you're going towards, which is this idea of the increasing the energy in the ordinary center,
yes.
Remain celibate, collect energy to be able to send it to the higher centers, in other words, it's cultivating essence life.
Okay.
You make the sacrifice. So I'm not so sure that attachment that I'm sacrificing is going to be the significant element in that ritual. So we say if we're looking at it as a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Is it a ritual of putting mm-hmm. something on an altar and sacrificing it, or is it a ritual of detachment of one thing after another? Not that. No.
I am not that.
Have to eat a candy bar? No, you don't have to eat a candy bar.
But what I'm saying is that I'm just posing the question. You know, I'm posing
yeah.
this question that, for instance, when you want to eat this chocolate sundae, there's the chocolate sundae, then there's your attachment to it. And the attachment is a process.
Mm-hmm.
And you can notice it when you start to come close to the chocolate sundae. And you can notice it starting to arise in you. And what I'm saying is, place your attention on that. Place your attention right on it and place it around the object. Watch that process within you. That's the seat, in a sense. That's the seat of attachment. That's the seat of the process. And if we look at that at that point, it starts to become something worthy of sending up, in a sense. Because one of the things that we do is when we allow the attachment to work mechanically, we are, the energy is going away. It's going into it. We're losing
right into
the energy.
Outer,
it's
into
going
the
into
outer
the
world.
Sunday. Yeah.
It's like saying you're supporting or this pump.
That's right.
To the material world, to the outer, which is being made more real while the inner is being depleted. Whereas what you want to do is take away from, you want to bring the flow from the outer into the inner.
One thing I can do is just stop eating the sundae. I can just stop eating the sundae. a form of sacrifice. I'm just not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. We'll be dying.
In my case,
this
go ahead.
See,
several people are one.
Hi, David.
Simon, greetings.
Greetings. Yeah, it reminds me too, remember in the 8 p.m., that moment of that fear into the awakened stage.
Yes. The fear of the waking
state. Yeah.
Of entering into the waking state. And this is the point I'm trying to make, is that these processes work in us. They work for various reasons. We learned these things over the years in growing up. This is our historical personality, the sleeping machine. It's just our body of worldly habits that are there. Let them come up, but rather than just shut them out and stop it, which you can do, that's a form of exercise. I'm saying maybe another way also, and maybe you do both, is to encapsulate it, watch the thing, and place your gentle attention on it, and see, well, what is it? How does it work? When does it come up? What is its temperature like? What is its color like? And at that point, it starts to become part of not you. And in the not you, then it becomes an object. And then you have something then to sacrifice. Eric?
Yeah.
I'm
not hearing anything right now.
Yeah, we aren't either. Is Harry
okay.
Mundell? I wonder if Harry could comment on this post that he put on the website regarding a particular sacrifice, that he thought about doing, if that meets this description at all that David is talking about here.
Harry wanted, he wrote, go to the website wingsofchaos.com and you'll see that Harry posted a comment regarding resentment and that there's something in regards to that he wants to work with.
Is he on there? Well, if he's
Sean,
not.
It's Sean Joe. Yeah, he's there.
Well, let me just comment. I don't know if Harry wants to engage on this item or not, but what I found interesting about what he wrote there is that he went through a process of thinking about whether to sacrifice something, whether only something that was, say, a negative emotion or something, like this, say, gluttony, or greed for ice cream or candy is what comes to mind at first. But he thought about something that might have been a habit, something, some behavior or some process or event that he's comfortable with because he has a feeling of how correct he is, that if somebody has been unjust, there's a criticism, somebody has violated the law, actually, has mistreated his mother and mistreated his family, and he's harboring resentment towards that person. So, is this a source of comfort, for him to hold on to his correctness, that he's right to have this resentment and that he wants to have this resentment, against that person. I thought that was an interesting item for him to take on because it's sort of another layer of attachment.
I posted a comment on Harry's thing, and what I posted was a quote from Shakespeare. Shakespeare says, I posted it this evening, resentment is like somebody taking poison and hoping for the other person to die.
Yes, right. That's a good one.
So, but it is a form of comfort. Resentment is certainly a form of comfort, and it rests along the lines of the other person truly did something unjust. You can prove it, and by all measures, it was an unjust act. And then what? See? And somebody's going to have to pay for that. And what I'm saying is that there's a process there. There's a process that comes up when we're looking at this idea of this event that this person keeps on the mother. And there's something that comes up in him. That's the thing to watch. To look at how that works.
What is that? Yeah.
But it's so subtle and pervasive. It starts to come up. And we can see it. You can begin to see the very beginnings of it as it starts to come up. And I say, take that moment and just don't do anything. Don't change it. Don't stop it. But just coat it in this holy, holy attention that we have. Coat it in that for the first 15 times, 20 times. Let it come back up. And let it come back up. Watch it until it becomes not you. Because as long as it's you, right, how could you give that up? How can you sacrifice in the form of sacrificing the form of the idea of like a demise, right? The killing of the animal for the divine.
Right.
How can you sacrifice something with you? You can't. You can't. You have to separate fully from it. And the mechanical is not you. That's all I'm saying.
The mechanical is not you. You're separating. You're detaching from the mechanical.
What am I doing there?
Yeah.
When I say I'm detaching from the mechanical, what I'm really saying is, I am the essential self. And where is the essential self? Where does the essential self stand? And it is just stands on the path to the divine. And that's all I'm saying. So from that posture standing, we watch this object, this thing that I am that resentment. I am that resentment. And gradually, you just see, look at that process. It's in you. It's something that, quote unquote, you do.
Right.
But if you begin to see it in that way, gradually, there's faith. And as soon as there's a crack in that cosmic egg, there's faith for something else to come in. And only when you are in that place can something come in. And that was the whole idea of the ancient sacrifices, that when you give to the higher, then the higher will come down and bless you as well. So that's how we unravel this idea of consecration. That's all I'm saying.
So, David, could we say...
Yes, Simon.
Could we say then to give some form to this sacrifice of comfort, that we applied this sacrifice to any urge or strong tendency, that be an object or a reaction, emotional reaction or an act?
Yeah. Next week, well, not tendencies, because next week we have to give up our desires. This week we're only giving up our comfort.
Okay.
That was a joke.
Yeah, but these things, renouncing or letting go these urges, because
yeah.
Usually what we always are looking for, we are looking for comfort.
Here's the danger that I bring to this conversation, Simon, and that's that I'm looking for something specific. I want somebody to bring something specific up. You're right theoretically, but when you place something specific on the object of attention here, that on the altar of the object of attention, then we can do something together as a group and help the individual begin the process of true sacrifice, of this kind of form of higher sacrifice.
Well,
so
I
you're right.
Plans, just very simple ones.
Pardon?
I'll give you one big one. I'm giving just a simple one that I always try to do. I like to read, as I use a lot of transit transportation. And the moment that I enter the transit transportation, you know, be that a subway or a bus, I'm just going for the seat, whatever seat I find. And immediately I see on me that tendency to go for it and win that spot for me to see. So I realize
I
tend to
win.
Start and I just don't see it. I just don't see it and I let somebody else see it.
Let me see if I got it. So you get on a bus and you immediately have to rush to try to get a seat. You're destined to get the seat, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Because I read, because I study, because I have my reason to have a seat.
Oh, because you
need to read.
The seat represents all these forms of pleasure for you. Okay, this is a wonderful example.
Right.
A perfect example. So, first of all...
Sorry. Funny enough, to study my joy of sacrifice.
So you've got to have a seat on the bus so you can read the joy of sacrifice?
That's correct. And that makes goal.
Everybody else get out of the way. So.
Wait till we get to the end. Wait till we get to the end of the different items to sacrifice before you give that up. Okay. Yes, okay, so there's a question from Harry Pianjo, rather, and he says, give me an example of how you would treat resentment, and say it again, Molly. Okay, an example of what you might do to coax that resentment.
Well,
resentment process. Okay, first of all, this is, I think, a wonderful example, and I'd like to get into this just a teeny bit. We only have a few minutes here, but... So, first of all, the word resentment is a generality. Because resentment, we all nod our head and go, oh yeah, I know what that means. And in fact, I have a lot of accounts that are resentful too, so... Therefore, you just nod your head and say, yes, I know what that means. But that doesn't do us any good. What does do us good is exactly and precisely how does it come forth in you? How does it actually start to arise? I assume that you're not filled with resentment 24/7, that every single second of the day you have this. If you do, that's a tough one. But there are moments when you might not be in resentment. 1 minute when you're not resentful. At that point, when you're not, then you can create a tool to go back into the realm of resentment that you know is going to come up. So when it comes up, first of all, what does it exactly mean for you? What does resentment mean, and how does it work? Is it in your belly? Do you notice it in your chest? Do your fingers do? What does your body do? Can you sense the electrical motion of it actually in yourself? Can you notice what it is and how would it, like, did somebody say a word and suddenly you have resentment? You go, oh yeah, I had that happen to me too. And you're in the midst of it. So the process that I'm looking for is, can we find our object of comfort? In this case, we're studying resentment, right?
Right. It can be, it's a negative, you know, it's a negative state, but it may be something we're quite comfortable with, is what I understood.
Anything that is reactive is a negative state, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So how does, help Harry out here. How do we do this? What can we do? How do we begin the process? And I use this phrase, coat it with attention. First of all, endeavor to not do anything about it. Try not to change it. guilty, what are the elements of shame? Guilt. But those elements and things like that are just ways that the resentment stays there and it keeps its place. Because as soon as you start to truly look at it, it has a set of tools that it's going to use to keep itself in place, I guarantee you. To have a whole set of tools.
Well, I understood what you were just saying before. Let's say one starting point would be to develop a feeling for what is this item feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do I feel like? What do I experience when I'm having this sense? What are my sensations?
If I may add something for what Harry was saying. I don't know if this is going to help him, but in the way that I would deal with that, or I have to deal with that, is in a similar way that you were describing before, David. When the situation happens, first of all, I have to be already in the subject, right? Like we are now. We're talking about detachment at whatever level we can have it. There must be for this word at least some doubt that that thing is not you, right? That it's a reaction.
I'm giving you the principle there, Simon, and all of us, is, as Spinoza says in Book 5 of the Ethics, there's, once you are in the infirmity, once you are in the problem, there's nothing you can do from the problem to change it. It's going to run its course.
Right.
But you can take a tool with you into that process. And the tool we have in the kind of work we're doing is called attention.
Yeah, you separate the witness. You apply attention.
There you go.
Yeah, you apply attention. You know, I'm thinking of this. I'm thinking of moments in the... Going back to the human biological machine again, what is it that happens in this moment what's her name? In the last chapter, this example, where the mirror comes up.
Where
Janet is enraged, where she has this rage that takes over her, and then she suddenly sees herself in the mirror. So
what happened there is she was caught in the sleep pattern. And the sleep pattern, a lot of our energy is stuck in our mechanical machine. And so what are we doing? Why are we doing this? We have to remember we're harvesting the energy for the transformation of our essential self. Okay?
So if I may continue with the example that I was giving you.
Yes.
So in the moment, that moment, by the act of attention, I can see the emotion coming in under, I have been identified, I identify with the reaction, and I see the whole blob of emotion coming out, and I justify it. And those are the key words, identification and justification. But if I have attention and that moment, if I have the attention, and a little lucidity and clarity to at least observe it and not go for it.
There will be a little moment
of detachment and just observe it. I say, oh, here is again. Here I am justifying again. Now, I'm not saying that he doesn't have the right. I mean, somebody may do something bad to him. But it's emotional and safe.
Simon, hang on. The point is that in the form of justification will be little phrases that'll come in that'll enter the linear brain, for instance, in this case of resentment for Harry. And it'll be extremely creative how it works. It's remarkable how creative that part of the brain is. It's the ego existing. In its existence, I don't blame it. It's just no longer as needed as it was. But so that's one thing, is this idea of justification. Yes, it is justified to conclude that that person did something immoral, unethical, illegal. That is correct. And it was done to a dear one.
No, but the point is not the, David, my point is not that justification. Of course the man did something that he shouldn't have done. The justification is he justified, or I myself, or Harry, justified to have that emotion to come on. He's not justifying the man that did something wrong. Obviously the guy did something that was bad. And that will require a different kind of action. But what Harry is getting trapped is justifying himself that he has identification through that reason to react emotionally in that way.
Yeah, you say to yourself, I'm correct, I'm right to have this emotion. I should have this reaction.
Exactly. Thank you. That's it.
That's part of the process as it comes up, is can we begin to observe that a little bit? Can we watch the process starting to emerge?
And that is when the act of attention, when you observe that little detachment as witness of that little magic moment from a few degrees from the size of what's going on to you. Because that is not the first time that has happened to us, neither Harry, neither me, nor you. So if we have been paying attention for a while, you can see that the whole pattern repeats and repeats with different scenarios.
Here's an interesting thing about that, is that after you do it a while and you begin to observe and that the attention now captures that, you will be thankful when it comes up again, when another adventure is presented to you, because you'll realize that's another opportunity to cleanse that area yet again, to cleanse it yet again from that exercise of that particular comfort. Make sense?
Yeah, it does. Let me just say, though, there's another... I wonder if anybody... I recall somebody referring to this. Another sort of process where there's a process that I've experienced a few times. You know, I randomly, let's say, you know, in a completely unstructured way, like just by chance, having the observation, having the detachment to see that I'm completely caught up in something mechanical, actually releases entirely.
Yeah.
You know, it's this idea about the electrical field, actually sensing or observing, identifying the source of a anomaly, electrical anomaly, causes it to straighten out, you know, to go away. I don't think that relates to a sacrifice process. It relates to an attention process.
I'm saying it does.
It does?
I'm saying it does because there's a comfort in staying with what we know.
Okay, well, let me just... I just realized that it dovetails with something, you know, that reading austerity description,
yeah,
you know, about the austerity thing. The features of that monastic austerity that are recommended there, it's actually not being recommended, again, because it's going to be particularly comfortable or particularly uncomfortable. It's the austerity is designed to produce the effect which David mentioned, which is to promote our essence of life, so, which is to say, you know, there may be elements of it without living externally in a monastery. There may be elements of the austerity that we can very well apply in everyday life, whatever lifestyle we're living. Beginning with very small elements, or let's say minor changes in lifestyle, where sacrifices are made, you know, of things where you know that things cause you to be mechanical, have emotional uprisings, you know, associated with them, or you have difficulty being detached, like rushing for the seat on the bus, like that. But what I was thinking of is what I was thinking of is to have, if there's electrical energy tied up in some repetitive behavior, you know, something coming up, something, feeling depressed over and over again by some particular experience or some particular memory even that you're having. I mean, if you can bring that energy, if you can observe that enough times or observe it with enough detachment that you catch yourself, let's say, and the way of, you know, that mirror
rather
than even biological machine, it's like the bubble can burst. I mean, the energy can come off that, and then what you experience is you have release from a tied up
energy.
An energy that's tied up. You've released it so that you can work with it, and just
absolutely.
You have attention energy, or you have electrical energy.
Or the divine.
Free. Yes, more
or
free.
Or the essential self.
For you to apply intentionally. You know, for the result of this attention effort to be for the benefit of all things.
Very good.
Well, I was thinking of, I know, David, I like this idea that you have of being specific, so let me just say that, and I'm not sure that this applies to the issue that Harry raised, Tianjo, the one he posted on, but what I'm thinking of specifically, and it's funny because how you hear certain things very vividly, but I had something happen to me, and this was before I ever read Uspensky or thought about coming to a spiritual school. But at a certain time in life, I was washing dishes. I mean, literally, I was scrubbing plates or something like that in the kitchen, and I was doing it very aggressively. I mean, I was kind of gritting my teeth, and maybe I clattered things against each other or something. It was not necessarily very efficient the way I was doing it. And then I had this moment of detachment, where I observed myself, and I had this, how do they call it, like a cognition, it wasn't like an enlightenment, but I had a cognition, a realization that I was angry, that I was feeling resentment of some kind, like what Harry was talking about. And then I had this sort of chain of memories. No, I had a perception. You know, I guess I asked myself, like, why am I so flexed up? Well, how come I'm so... And then I realized, somebody's forcing me to wash dishes. Why do I have to wash dishes? I don't have to wash dishes. Oh, my mother is making me wash dishes. This is a chore. You have to wash dishes. I had this realization that I had this stored...
anomaly. I was
flexed up. I was doing this with a lot more stiffness and, like, energy than was obviously... And what happened in that incident, I actually, it's exactly what the least to call, if you've ever done this kind of, some of this processing work that EJ's done over the years, it was like this blow off of energy. The thing, complexity, issue or resentment about washing dishes, it just went off. I mean, I actually literally, in the next moment, I found myself there, I'm scrubbing the dishes. Oh, this doesn't bother me. I'm just washing the dishes. I just went from, being charged about it, and being neutral about it. Like, I'm just washing the dishes.
Having to wash the dishes to just washing the dishes.
And the fact is, it was a very beneficial event to me because I'm still very capable of washing dishes, and it doesn't bother me particularly. I think I've washed a lot of dishes at some large event, and
Brother Lawrence. he found God in the soap bubble.
Well, I haven't gotten there yet. But I'm saying I remember very clearly, and the funny thing is that when I read that passage of Janet Green, the years later in the Human Biological Machine, that's one of the things I thought of. I recognized, I've had experiences like that. Yeah, I remember I didn't have a mirror, but I caught myself. I just felt all of this.
You felt this muscle tension.
Yeah, I felt all of this anger and resentment that I was having about washing the dishes, and I shrugged it off. I just went like, guess what? It's not in the present.
This isn't present here.
The issue that I'm... somebody's forcing me to do the dishes is not present. It's not an issue that's here and present.
So
it just went away.
Let me ask a couple of questions. We only have about 10 minutes. First of all, John Joe, did that help at all? And is this conversation helping the process of sacrifice and sacrifice of comfort? Yes, no, maybe so.
You know, Dave, I guess I could make a comment, which is that in the human biological machine, a large part of the thesis of that book is that our essential self is identified with the historical personality and is in a state of complete inertness because of that. So when I think of the joy of sacrifice, I'm thinking, and as I've read this chapter, I've thought of to myself something like this. Look, when we start on the path of transformational evolution, we're like Pigpen with a swirling of unconscious habits that have acquired we've acquired over time. And so the sacrifice of our comfort, as this chapter is pointing out, is can you simplify your historical personality? Don't change it. Just try to simplify all the activities, all the mental activity, all the emotional activities, all the physical activities, to basically streamline it. And in streamlining it, that is going from a pig pen type chaotic mess of all kinds of unconscious habits manifesting unconsciously to a simplified streamlining approach is the sacrifice of comfort, and in that sacrifice, you actually find extra energy available for the essential self to begin to assert itself as a complementary force.
Right, and that's what a lot of HBM is about, in that whole study of finding the difference and the interplay between these two different electrical bodies.
But I also agree with Silverdale that this is what the austerity recommendation is about, I think, in this sacrifice thing. But this is what the benefit. Yeah, I didn't want to pass over that. What I was struck by in Harry's post and in the issue that the way I face it is this idea that why would such negative states and emotions be sources of comfort? They are. They're comfortable with the machine because they're our habits.
That's my question. Comfort to what?
Yeah, they're habits that are usual and that keep us in the rut. They keep the machine going.
Well, we're so familiar with them that we become comfortable in them, and I think that's really what the chapter says. And it's only by self-observation that we begin to realize that, boy, I'm comfortable being who I am. Do I want to change? Well, if I want to change, I have to, as you say, David, concentrate and then consecrate and then yield through active conscious simplification of our lives. We don't want to go out and become masters of the universe. We just want to give our essential self enough breathing room so that it can start to grow and become a force in its own right.
And we're doing that. We're just trying to create more and more room for the essential self to exercise what it is. We are there already. We are starting to do that. All of us have worked our way to points of some objective attention. My point is, we need to do. We take it to the next level, and the next level, and the next level. And so austerity, the life of the ascetic, is That's through also throughout all of the religious, you know, you
right.
see it throughout.
Right.
And we're not necessarily doing it all the way like that. But, you know, do you have to have 3 meals a day? Do you have to drive a particular, does the temperature in your house, you need 4,000 square foot? Do you have to have a particular this or that or this? Those are all critical issues to the machine. And so we're offered the opportunity to look at this idea of living a life of austerity. And then you harvest that energy that you're giving away to us.
Right. Also, yeah, and also, needless to say, the aspect of that that EJ brings to our attention almost constantly and over again in so many different forms is is there a place in your life for essence, activity? You know, is there something about this work that you have time for, that you have attention for? Are you able to free up energy?
There is time.
And get engaged, get in motion.
I have time for this work.
Yeah.
I'm very busy in my job. I have time for this work. I have time because that's all I do. This is the form of it. Now, I want to offer anybody that wants, if you have an issue with like a particular type of comfort that you want to work with, post it on the site under Sacrifice 01, and we'll, if you need help, we'll go there and help. We'll give suggestions, okay? We'll go back and we'll look and we'll see what each other posts, and maybe we'll say, here's an idea I have. Here's an idea I have about that. Makes sense? Is that okay?
Yeah. Good suggestion.
Thank you.
Let me just ask you, David, does that mean, are we going to continue to talk about this sacrifice next week, or are we going to go on to this sacrifice of desire?
Do we have to sacrifice our desires too?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I didn't know that chapter was there.
Good God, I hope not.
It's not in my book. I'm pretty sure, anyway.
This guy on the title page is wearing a clerical collar.
Uh-oh.
Boy, I paid a lot of money for those desires.
That's right.
David, what I was going to mention too is that word, that austerity. When I think about austerity with added to comfort, I think about overindulgence of things, stuff, the ones that you were mentioning, you know. But I feel in austerity eventually, because we have been talking about emotions and reactions and stuff like that, which really don't come to the word austerity, or maybe there is some kind of austerity of a reaction. Indulgence.
You're right. You did not spend as much time on stairs. We only have about a minute, okay?
Right.
So unfortunately, these are vibrant topics. And so bottom line is that study what Simon just said too, and look at these ideas of austerity and how you can apply it into your life as well. So we're going to have to wrap it up at the moment, but we'll meet again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and we're going to we'll start looking at the next chapter. Okay? Sacrifice your desire. So thanks for coming tonight, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Thanks, Dave and Ivan.
Bye-bye. Thank you, David. Thank you. Bye.